We have a treat for you guys. I am so excited about tonight's episode of Ideology. I'm Kyle. Yeah. That's the lovely Casey.
Hi, y'all.
Hi, y'all. And Mr. What do we call him at the beginning? Johannathan Pritchard. No, I'm just kidding. Jonathan Pritchard. Hello, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm looking forward to seeing how this turns out.
That's what all of them say. That's what every guest that we have says. Every guest.
I love it.
But you're in the good column, though. Actually, in just a second, KC is going to attempt to do some magic for us. So I know that you're all excited about that. So get your salty mug ready, KC. I have a feeling you're going to need it.
Oh, I don't have my salty mug. Today I am my Missile Defense Agency mug.
Oh, badass. Okay. Let's see. What do we want to go through for announcements? All right. So all of you guys have been asking about the climate change discussion that's going to take place on Friday. This is with Dr. Peter Ward. He will be coming in, and I think I'm going to get – I'm talking to one guy through Messenger. He used to be part of, interestingly enough, Flat Earth Core. I don't know if he'll wind up coming on, but – he has some interesting ideas about climate change. Speaking of climate change, on November the 13th, I've been trying to get this guy since March, and finally he has agreed to come on. And I actually do think that's going to be on an Ideology Day, Casey. So you should be excited about
the
this.
The climate change guy?
Maddie's Paradigm. Maddie's Paradigm.
Oh, Maddie. I love Maddie. He's a mess.
So
this will be fun.
Are you sure we're talking about the right one, the right person?
Maddie's Paradigm?
Hmm.
Yeah, he's crazy, isn't he?
Oh, okay. I thought you were okay. Let me explain for everybody. Maddie's Paradigm believes that hell exists in the center of the Earth, and due to its expansion, it's cracking the Earth up, and that in turn is causing what we call climate change. So hell is actually the reason for climate change. And he has a library of documents that he has put together, and actually really good graphics. I must say, although I don't agree with his thesis, his graphics are really good. You know, that alone I think could convince people. But Jonathan, you shake your head. The guy has 62,000 people that follow him on Twitter.
Yes, it's insane. God. He's a nut job. It's going to be great. It'll be fun. You should watch.
It's so tough. Cause what's that saying? It's like, don't worry about anybody stealing a good idea. If it's actually good, you'll have to shove it down people's throats. And that just kind of points to it. It's like this dum-dum has 62,000 followers, and geniuses have like 100 on Twitter. You're just like, this just... Yep. It makes doing the right thing really tough, because you're like, look, I'm a lot smarter than these guys, and I could make a much better dumb thing that would get a whole like tens of thousands of idiots involved. All right, screw it. Let's start a cult. Okay, let's just do it.
This is actually a good idea. This could be tested.
Yeah,
this actually could be tested.
Scientology.
Very good point. It's because the geniuses are boring, you know? Yes, they know everything, but it's nothing like watching someone tell you that hell is cracking the Earth to cause climate change.
I know what that sound was.
What? Uh-oh.
I know exactly what that sound was. I think
know.
I do.
You know what's going on over here. You hush over there, mental man.
Props. I've heard that sound many, many times.
This is going to be good.
Hold on,
two more quick things. November 5th, Sargon of Akkad and Adam Kokesh will be with us. Sargon will be coming back, and they're going to be talking about anarcho-capitalism. Everybody remembers Adam Kokesh because that was the first episode that Steve and I literally said probably three words the entire show. That was it. We were gunned down big time on that one. November the 8th, Isaac Arthur, who will be talking about the possibility that one day we will be to the point where you can download your memories, essentially download your brain, into something, and when your body gives out, upload it into whatever your next vessel will be, because of the, you know, they can map out electricity, and it's really fascinating. But I hope that that comes way after I'm gone. I mean, what would you guys do? Would you want to be uploaded,
tortured back to existence? What? That sounds like a wonderful time to spend in purgatory.
I don't know, man. I don't know. What do you think, Casey? Would you be uploaded?
Would I be uploaded? Yeah. Why the hell not? Why not?
It's like most of my brain is in Google Keep and my email anyways. Like, there's so little I keep here.
That's a very good point.
That there's so just like three gigs would probably fill all of my memories that I have in my head right now. Everything else is external. Like, yeah, I keep my brain everywhere. Like, my desk is my brain. My whole life. Yeah, screw it. Download me, upload me. I don't care. But, you know, when I come online, I'd probably scream a lot. You know, just how disorienting would that be to just have a robot body? Yeah, that'd be terrifying. Sign me up.
If I did it, I would want to make sure that every morning I played that AOL sound. Remember how that used to be, that dial-up sound?
Just for the IRC for chat.
I guess the good thing about it is that you would be able to, like, there are so many of these shows and people that we have on, I would just like to go in and erase. You know what I mean? Like, this never happened. So with a digital brain, that would actually be possible. So
was it like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where that's happening and it kind of goes wrong? Just like, all these recipes for dystopian future experiences. I'm all for it.
There's a lot of things that really, like, really smart people entertain that I don't understand. Like, the debate over are we living in a simulation is actually gotten a lot of, like, serious traction. And then this one is getting a lot of traction. And I understand it's cool to think about, are we living in a simulation? I tend to think that when given two scenarios, the most boring is the one that's accurate. So the simulation is very fantastical. Mm-hmm. Everyday life like we have it now, very boring. So this obviously is the real one. But still, it seems like they would like scoff that off and go back to, you know, equations and quantum physics.
Right. Well, for me, a big thing is, okay, the whole free will versus predeterminism debate is like all your choices were set in stone at the Big Bang and everything's just playing out like a big game of billiards versus I have free will and I make my choices, right? There's a lot of research pointing to that your body makes up your mind for you and then your conscious mind goes, that's what we're doing and I decided it. And you're like, no, not really. So in a way, you don't have free will, but maybe you do. But you know what? It doesn't change your experience at all in any way, shape, or form, right? Sure. It there's no experiential difference to determinism versus free will. And every argument that I've ever – well, I don't get into many arguments like this. I just usually just walk away. But anybody who argues for predeterminism, I just really have an intense desire to just punch him in the face. Just haul off, hit him in the face and be like, I'm sorry. It was set at the Big Bang. I have no choice in it. I'm sorry. But then also, I've come to the point of going, okay, but do you look both ways before crossing the street? I'm like,
I hate to do this. I hate to do this so early in the show, but we here on the Non Sequitur Show, we like to keep our guests honest, and you said something incorrect there a second ago that obviously the Bible says that Jesus gave us free will, and so I just needed to make that little correction really quick.
Well, you know what? Jesus was a drunk, so what does he know? He was just sitting around drinking wine all the time with 12 dudes. All right, you know what? I'm going to take advice from somebody who's living a life I would want to live, and if hanging out with just 12 homeless, jobless assholes is a no thanks. I'm not going to take advice from that guy.
You have found your home. I think you have found your home. This is this is going to be great. If you're going to live your life like anybody, ladies and gentlemen, live it like Willie Nelson. Okay, I feel like Willie Nelson has lived a life that he can be proud of.
Well, I'm just so happy. I've done like 20 hours of podcasts and I finally get to say what I actually think instead of here's what's on the script.
Nope. Yeah, you're free to say what compared to a lot that we've heard on here, it will be very, very sane. This will be one of the more calm episodes, I promise you. Now, KC is going to take us through some magic really quick.
Well, so I went to Orlando last month and went to a magic show, and it was really cool. And so GE being GE decided.
Wait, what magic show did you go to?
Which one? I went to in Orlando. It was at the what's that upside down museum called? The place that's
Ripley's Believe It or Not Drive.
Wonderworks.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Talking about Wonderworks, the upside down building. And
and so they have this guy named popcorn?
Is there popcorn with the playing card? Sorry, I used to live in Orlando, so I'm like, did you go see a buddy of mine?
I saw Tony Brent. Do you know Tony Brent?
Never heard of him. So, he's awful.
No, he's really, really good. It was very entertaining. So we went to see Tony Brent. So I have a magic kit that GE decided he had to get, right? And he hadn't opened it. So like yesterday I was like, you know what? Or maybe it might have been Sunday. I'm not really sure. I was like, you know what? I'm going to open this motherfucker. So I get it out and I pull the first thing out that like catches my eye. And of course I don't read the instruction book because why bother? Right. And I don't know how to use anything in this kit, but I very quickly figured out this one piece of equipment. And it's because it is actually magic. Are you ready? All right. So this right here, can y'all see this?
Actually magic.
This is a vase of some sort. Yeah. And inside the vase, there's a ball, right? Okay, I'm trying to do this above. All right, so the ball, red ball, yeah? All right, you see the vase over here. I'm going to take the red ball, and I'm going to put it over here. It's over there, right? No ball, right? So I have the bottom, and here's the lid. Nothing in it, right? Totally empty.
Got it.
All right. Now, Kyle, you're going to abra-fucking-cadabra over there. All right, you ready?
Abra-fucking-cadabra.
Ta-da!
What? Where'd that come from?
How'd you do that?
Because it's magic. It's fucking amazing. Magic.
You just demonstrated that it is. I believe you.
Mm-hmm. Right. No way we'll be
all right. My life has changed.
Yeah.
Okay, now... I don't. Can you do something in turn so that we can have like a little mini magic off real quick? I know this is very impromptu, so you can say no. I'm throwing it on you right now, but oh, what the? No way! Did you just see that?
Oh,
no, when you're good, you're good.
You're good. You have. Let me. Awesome. Are you ready? Are you ready for this, Jehonathan? You have a gift.
Yes.
You have a gift.
You're a piece of shit. That's what it is. You have a gift.
That's a good segue, though. That's a very good segue because we were talking before the show about a little bit about Jonathan and how he kind of got started in this at a young age. So I'm actually going to let him introduce himself and let you guys know where you can find more about him. The links are in the description as well as on your screen right now. Fixed. It was incorrect. And that was because of the hellacious day that I had. I lost everything, guys. Everything. If it weren't for Apple products and having the iCloud, I would be out every picture, everything that I own. Stupid me downloaded a program to change my voice like Freddy Krueger for a video that I'm putting out. And Freddie had a nightmare. It was a nightmare on my laptop. Seriously. So anyway, Jonathan Pritchard, please introduce yourself, sir.
All right, so I usually like to work now backwards. Right now, I'm a mentalist and a business consultant that basically teaches people how to negotiate, present more effectively, improve their sales process, be more influential, all that kind of fun stuff. And I do that because businesses have the money. But I got to do that by traveling the world as a mentalist, which is basically a magician that graduated to cooler stuff. to me, a magician does really cool things like make tigers appear. And when they do that, people go, "How did you do that?" And when a mentalist does something, they run out of the room screaming and ask, "How did you know that?" So that's kind of the difference. I got my start by working with James Randi, who had a million-dollar challenge for anybody who claimed to have genuine supernatural powers. So I worked with him to design testing protocol and handle applications for that million-dollar challenge. I saw every way that people were trying to scam their way to the $1 million and went, "I can do these scams better than they can." And that was kind of my master's course in mentalism. But what primed me for doing that is I grew up doing magic tricks since I was 5 years old. It's really been the thing that's held my interest for almost all of my life, for 30 years now. It's been the context where I've been able to explore my curiosity most fully. Anything I'm interested in, there's a home for it in the world of mentalism. So that's the long story medium, pretty much. But
that is...
Yeah.
That is so cool. So you always knew that you wanted to be a magician? You didn't go through any phases like being a cop or a fireman? It was always a magician?
It was always a magician. And then in late high school, I started figuring out that the mind reading tricks seemed to freak people out the most and go, "That's cool. Let me figure that out." And then just specialized through college. But in all honesty, it was watching Magician on the Johnny Carson show. That's how long ago it was. On the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, I saw a magician and he had lovely assistants. I was like, wait. If I'm him, I get to work with them. All right, done. That's what I'm doing with my life. And I think about it all the time. Like, that is the worst reason to stick with anything ever. It's like, what decision have you made when you were 5 years old that you put 30 years worth of work into it? It's like, "I'm going to eat marshmallows for breakfast every morning." And then 30 years later, you're like, "Well, I decided when I was 5, I was eating marshmallows for breakfast. So I'm just going to keep doing this." Like, it's insane that I've done that. But I recognize that I am insanely lucky that it was that and it went well.
Yeah. All jokes aside, I think that if you're going to put that kind of work and time into anything, that would probably be the thing to do. Like, the earlier you start, the better that you're going to be when you're, and the younger that you can be it. Mm-hmm. So,
right. I didn't know it going up front, but there's kind of a long tail for being a magician. And so think of it like mystery artist is the umbrella term. And then you've got magicians, and then mentalists are kind of separate creatures. Magicians will say, "No, mentalists are just doing magic tricks." But the mentalists are like, "Well, why can't you start a cult?" Right? And just like there are magicians and mentalists, there are illusionists, card workers, coin guys. There are all sorts of different divisions that get more and more specific. So I'm one of those creatures that I like to call a mentalist.
Do you guys war with each other? Like, if you see each other in the streets, you sling cards at each other. Like, instead of a drive-by, it's a card buy.
No,
I guess.
It's friendly. But if you want to see that world play out, look up Shakes the Clown. It's got Wild Bobcat Goldthwait as the main character, and he plays a clown. And it's the best depiction of clowning I've ever seen in my life. Like, if you want to know what being a clown is like, watch that movie. And whatever town they're in, there's gang warfare between the clowns and the mimes. So whenever they see each other out on the street, they all gang up on each other and have a huge fight. But the mimes don't ever say anything, and it's hilarious that they get all beat to hell. It's awesome. Amazing movie.
If you want to, I have somebody that can outdo your clown. with Bobcat Goldthwait. If you want to see true clowning, tune in tomorrow at 8 o'clock with my other co-host, Steve. That is the epitome of clown. If you want to see somebody who truly has clowning down to an art, Steve McRae is dead on. Love you, Steve.
I love it. It's an art form. It really is. The fool is incredible archetype.
Clowns are fucked up. Not doing it.
They are. And they scare me.
They are scary. They do. They are scary.
Well, it's just like anything. It's just like anything. There's a pyramid of competence, right? So almost everybody you've ever seen is low competence because there's low barrier to entry. Somebody buys $2 worth of white face paint and they're like, I'm a clown. And you go, that's fucking freaky. You shouldn't be around children. Go fuck yourself. Right. It's like, you're terrifying. But then as you get better, you're just like, holy crap, that's amazing. Like Steve Martin, he's an incredible clown. That kind of thing. You go, boy, I don't know what, but I just love that guy. That's fantastic. And it's just like with guitar. There's so many assholes that show up at a party and we're like, I'm going to play guitar. And you're just like, no, please don't. But watching somebody play flamenco, you're just like, Jesus, yeah, please play some more. That's phenomenal. So, yeah, it's there are very, very few clowns that aren't bad is really the takeaway there.
But a lot of clowns. And they're all fine. A lot of clowns. Who is that? Mm-hmm. Who is that clown that did America's Got Talent? That sang.
Oh, Puddles the pity party.
Yes, Puddles pity party. He was mm-hmm. brilliant. I mean, he was.
He's done stuff brilliant. With. He's done stuff with. What is that called? There's a band that does retro, like jazz interpretations.
I think I know
jazz covers mm-hmm. of a whole bunch of modern songs.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of it. Jukebox something, right? I think it was jukebox something.
Postmodern jukebox, that's what it is.
Yeah, postmodern jukebox. So do you design your own tricks, or how does that work? I've always wondered, have all the tricks been done and they're constantly being copied and altered? Or like, how hard is it to come up with an original magic trick?
Okay. Are you ready to have all joy and happiness and magic ruined for you? Like, I need to have this conversation with you before we go farther. Like, how much of this do you want destroyed? Because I can wreck all of it. Most people go, all right, yeah, I'm ready for it. But then they go through their five stages of grief for their sense of wonder. They deny it. They go, no, it can't be like that. And then they bargain. No, it has to be something else. Then they get angry. Like, you think I'm an idiot because that worked. And then they get depressed. They're like, oh, everything's awful. And it's just cardboard and gaff tape? That's really it? And you go, yeah. And then they finally accept it and go, all right, you know, it's cool. Okay. You know, I could go watch another show again. That's neat.
What you just described is literally the first 30 minutes of each show that I do on this program. Every day. So we're good.
I'm saying let the motherfucker burn. Tear it down.
So here's every single magic or mind reading trick, whatever, defined, right? The magician creates a context for the audience to make logical assumptions that are later shown to not be true. That's it. That's every single trick ever.
I'm not sure where the sawing a lady in half falls in on that arc.
You assume that there's no room for her to go anywhere else, so therefore she is being sawed in half.
She is.
Obviously. And then you pull it apart and they go, oh, okay, well, wow, I guess she got sawed in half. That's neat. Any good trick, right? Any trick that doesn't work, you didn't meet those criteria.
So, but do you,
any effect that really works is because the magician allows you to believe your perception of what's going on, and you believe the lies that you tell yourself more than anything I could tell you. So what I do is I create a situation where you know for sure what's going on because you're in on something, but that's not accurate. Right. So it's just like you're not consciously aware of all the assumptions you're making all the time, because if you were, you would have seizures. right? You're assuming that the desk is going to hold your laptop. You're assuming that the ground is going to hold you as you walk. You're assuming that your clothes aren't just going to disintegrate. Now, you've got a lot of previous life experience to draw on that these are reasonable assumptions, right? And your brain works on exactly the same amount of electricity as the light bulb in your refrigerator. Like, that's it. And everything we do runs off that much power. Right. And some are really fucking dim. Our brains have gotten really good at finding shortcuts. In the instant your brain thinks it's found a shortcut, it'll take it. And it won't even pay attention that it's done it because I got other shit to worry about. So you're not even consciously aware of all the assumptions you're making, but the magician has sat down and planned, what can I do to make those assumptions happen? And since it's a non-conscious process, it's incredibly difficult as an audience member to backtrack what happened because you're not even consciously aware of the mental processes that were required to make the magic trick happen in the first place, which is why it's really tough to fool dogs or children or drunk people. Their cognitive faculties aren't online. They're not trusting those logical assumptions. Their logical capacity is diminished, and therefore the potential for magical effect is diminished too. Right. So that's why
I don't know. Like, when GE's drunk, you can pretty much fool him with anything.
I was going to say, that's the best of humanity right there. Children, dogs, and drunk people. Like, that is the glorious spot for humanity right there.
Oh, you can confuse them.
You can interrupt their visual systems, right? Uh-huh. There are creatures that have visual, like, persistence of vision, right? Object persistence. That when something rolls behind something that obscures it, and it continues on, they go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But then when it just disappears and stops, they go, wait, what? Right, yeah. There you go. That's what I was looking for, object permanence. So you can fool really low-level biological processes. That's why visual magic, like a tiger showing up, you just go, oh, shit, that wasn't there. Now it is. Oh, God, that's scary. And you can disappear something for a dog. You can throw the ball and it goes, huh, what? That's a magic trick to the dog, but it's not a sophisticated one. It's not really going to break their reality apart. You can't tell a dog what street it grew up on and have it question everything that's real, right?
Yeah.
So there are layers of mental processes that you can sidejack to create effects, and that's why visual magic appeals to children. They lack the previous life experience to understand why telling somebody what street they grew up on is amazing. They don't know that that's not possible. So fuck you. Like, show me where that hanky came from.
I want to see the rabbit come out of the hat.
Right, right. Let me pet the rabbit. My brother can eat an elephant, whatever, right? It's just like, what the hell? They're not logical creatures. So magic is the study and leverage of your logical faculties, which is kind of fun.
We talked a little bit. I think this is an interesting point. We were talking before we came on about some of the guests that we've had, the Jilly Juice and the Turpentine guys, and because these people believe in just absolute crazy stuff. Now, I was going to ask you originally if you ever believed at any point that magic was real, or if this was always something you knew that was done, you know, by man, and you just wanted to be a part of that. Like, did you ever think that there was some kind of, magical side to magic?
I wanted to. Like, I wanted it to be real so badly. Like, yeah, it's that kind of like, okay. So these are the beginner magic books where you cut apart a milk carton and construct some prop, and then the prop does the trick for you. Okay, but eventually I'll get to the good stuff where the real stuff happens. And then you just kind of go, oh, no, I'm it. Imagination is the real magic trick. Oh, okay, that's cool.
You thought it was like Scientology.
Yes. Right, right. Speaking of Scientology, but my dad was a minister for the first 20 years of my life, right? So I wanted it to be real. This is my dad, my mom, convinced that the Jesus man loves them a lot, and they were convinced enough that it was the deal that, you know what, we are morally obligated to share this with the world, so let's start a church, right? So I basically went to church 7 days a week for my whole life until junior high school time, right? But I was like, why am I not experiencing the mojo? Why, what's wrong with me, right? Classic victim blaming. It's like, oh yeah, the spirit healing didn't work because you didn't believe it enough, and that's why you're fucked. And it's like, what a brutal mind fuck to pull on somebody. Mm-hmm. So I'd always wanted it to be real. I wondered why I wasn't like everybody else, evidently, until they realized, oh, okay, it's all fucking magic tricks. So that's the weird kind of dichotomy, is that magicians who can do magic know it's not real, but it's the only real magic possible. But real magic isn't possible, and the people who think they can do it don't know they're not.
Right. It's just the weirdest magician of all time was Jesus.
I'm going to argue with you because I totally put the ball on the other side of the room, and then the ball was there. It's like, I mean, I did magic.
How destructive do you want this conversation to get?
Oh, dumpster fire.
Do you want to preserve the gossamer thin mystery of the ball and vase, or?
No, let's fuck it up.
Okay, because I mean, that's, you put that ball over there, and there is a something in that vase.
Ball?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Vase? Oh, hold on. I don't want to drop the things. Hold on. Let's set up a barrier here. Vase?
Right?
Mm-hmm. What kind of flowers do you put in that?
Shit. I can't figure out how the fucking camera works. Vase? Empty vase?
Right.
What kind of flat? It's very small.
This is fantastic. I don't know.
Lid.
Yes.
Empty lid.
Empty lid.
Except. Empty lid.
Right.
There's a shell.
Oh. See? That's dirty.
Yeah.
That's dirty.
Now you went and done did it.
The ball. And the shell.
That's funny. So does that ball actually not come out of that shell lid?
Yeah, no, this doesn't come out.
It's a single piece of plastic that's painted.
Yeah, see, it looks like it's the inside. But then the ball goes in the vase, the shell goes on the ball, and the lid goes on the shell. I'm a little
disappointed that you didn't point out what the vase looks like.
Oh, yeah, I did that off air.
Yeah.
It's not a butt plug. It's a magic trick.
Right. Yeah, we're not that kind of show.
You probably don't know this, and maybe some of the people in the chat don't know this, but my very first YouTube video was about an item called, well, it was a Jehovah's Witness video to start.
Oh, no.
But then it ended and it was about the baby Jesus butt plug and Jackhammer Jesus, which is a giant Jesus dildo. So yeah.
That was my first enormous.
I remember that video. That's why I became a patron.
That's why you became a patron, because of baby Jesus butt plug.
I have to say, sadly, this is probably we've probably had more episodes of you and I together, Casey, where a sex toy has made an appearance than not. Last week, it was the beer opener. You know, that just kind of came out of nowhere.
I think that was 2 weeks ago, wasn't that?
Was it 2 weeks ago? They all run together.
I don't know. So, yeah, poison in the well, yeah.
So let's talk about
there's a good point that you usually have more fun with more friends with sex toys than you do magic tricks.
That's true. I like this guy. I think he should come around more often. This is it's like he fits right in.
Yeah, right.
So talk us through about what you do with a Think Like a Mind Reader. What is that about? What are you teaching to the folks?
All right. So, about 10 years, I traveled the country doing college shows So college kids are a perfect demographic for what I do. They're still excited to be alive. That's a good point. And they're excited to be away from home. So they're still enthusiastic. The light hasn't gone out in their eyes yet, right? So doing college shows is great. I love it. So I show up and I do my 70-minute theater, my interactive comedy improv mind reading show, right? Because I don't know what people are going to be thinking about. The framework is essentially the same, but how people respond, what they think, what they say, it's all a crapshoot. So I've got to figure out how to handle it and how to ride with it. So it's a lot of fun. Keeps me on my toes. So I've been doing that about 10 years. Well, then college kids don't know I'm not a rock star. So then to them, I am one. So if you behave like a rock star, you are, right? So you do the show and then you're like, after the show, I'll be outside signing autographs. See you later. And then you go outside and now there's a 45-minute line of people to sign autographs, right? To here, would you sign my poster? Yeah, sure. So
do you sign boobs?
Funny you should ask.
I would make that mandatory.
Because I like working clean in the college market so that I can work more colleges. I like working clean in the corporate market so I can work more companies. Theater shows are where you could actually do whatever you want to do as long as you tell people what it is they're getting into. So those are the I do the few and far between, but I just kind of slip it in. Huh?
Oh, never mind. Go ahead. What? Just kind of slip it in.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Just slide it in. Well, I was going to say in my corporate and college gigs, I just slide this in as a joke. But in the theater world, for some reason, it lands as an invitation more than anywhere else because I'll do something and write it down on a like an art pad and then tear off the paper and show that I got it right. And they're like, wow, neat. So then I hand it to the person and go, I'll sign that after the show or body parts, just ask. And that's that's the single throwaway line, right? That's just the single joke. And in colleges, everybody's like, oh, that's so funny. Companies. Oh, that's so funny. Theater shows. Well, I just did a theatrical seance, which is the correct seance. The hold hands around a table. That's the Hollywood play at home version. Real seances were theater events because so many people wanted to see them that they would fill 1,500 seat amphitheaters. They just sold out occasions. So they were basically like a giant magic show with some hymns. So think of a mega church with a magic show, had a baby, that's a seance. So I was doing historically accurate seances, and my sweetie Ashley was like, hey, how did it go? I was like, I signed three boobs. So it was a three boob signing seance, which was kind of fun. So yeah. So that answers that question. Yeah. So yeah. That's fun. Anyway.
Well, so doing college. Let me stop right there. Let me stop right there because I have something that kind of ties in with that. This was going to be a question that I was going to ask later, but since we're into that whole area, do you do magic in the bedroom to impress a date? And if so, what magic trick do you do?
No.
Ask people
because in the bedroom. Because it doesn't impress anybody. So it's like,
what?
Oh, I
really?
Listen, most magic tricks are so stupidly simple and dumb that magicians are guarding empty safes, right? Like, that's it. The secret to magic is that it's really simple. All we're doing is messing with your head. Like, that's it, for the most part.
I feel like you could have a lot of fun with this, though, Jonathan.
I'm saying I need my wand. Right, but that's the thing. A magic trick isn't going to do it. But understanding human psychology and understanding why magic works in the first place, now that is infinitely leverageable. That's the cool part, right?
Okay.
So the magic trick itself doesn't do anything. The psychology process it's predicated on, that'll get you anywhere you want to go.
Okay.
Right? See, like in the bedroom, you like have a built-in wand. Like, right?
And if you want, if you wanted to scare him though, you could be like, "Oh, I just made the condom disappear."
Ta-da! No,
don't do that.
Okay, no, all right, I don't feel like getting sued.
Kadabra.
Okay, yeah, just kidding.
Here's your lawsuit.
So yeah, fuck. So as a mentalist, you kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier. You're not doing the kind of grand scale magic tricks like the, you know, making a tiger appear, those kind of things. Your focus is more on getting inside their head a little bit. So what does that entail? Like, what kind of areas do you go in, and what do generally people freak out about the most?
Well, this actually ties into the like a mind reader question that you're asking about. So the, mm-hmm. the same answer will get us to both questions or both. Anyway, the autograph line, people going, "Holy shit, you're living the dream. You're traveling the world. You're getting to do what you want to do," all that stuff. And I started, and to me, it's just how I grew up. It's what I've dedicated my life to do. And it's just how I think naturally. But I understand that my experience is so far outside the standard social narrative that I am like a Martian to most people. They're just like, "No, it's easy for you because of whatever excuse they have in their head," right? So right. I just started realizing, holy shit, how I think about things is valuable specifically because I don't think like other people. So I started talking to college kids after the shows, and because they would be like, "Boy, I can't even imagine doing what you do for a living," meaning not having a 9-to-5 job or anything like that. So I was like, here's how I went about doing it. Here's how I think about things. Here's how I network. Here's how I make opportunities happen. So those were my unknowing first coaching clients. I didn't know that was a thing that I was really excited to do or that there was a word for it. But then like a year or two later, I start getting emails back from people. "Hey, thank you so much for taking that time to talk to me. It made all the difference in the world. Here's what I'm doing now. Here's why it's so much better." And I was like, "Ah, shit, now I have to teach people and share this with the world." And over the years, the same like 20 topics keep coming up. So the details change, the people change, the question changes, but the principle stays the same. Self-confidence, imagination, creativity, networking, self-confidence, like all those kinds of things just came up all the time over and over and over. So I shoved them all into a book. So then that way I would have legitimacy as a person to talk about it. Because the moment that broke it for me was, all right, understanding how to craft an experience for a room of 20 or 2,000 people to create really convincing demonstrations that I can read minds, predict the future, influence their behavior, all these things. It's all based on understanding human psychology inside and out and understanding why people do what they do, why they think the way that they think, and how they navigate reality. Once you really understand that system, you can now get that system to do what you want it to do. And that is fundamental human motivational psychology. So once you crack that nut, now you can figure out, oh, how does this apply to relationships? How does this apply to dating? How does this apply to business, marketing, sales, social media, like across the board? Anytime that there's a person involved, you're talking about psychology. And who knows psychology better than a person that can get people, very rational, reasonable people, to believe ridiculous things like, "I can read your mind." All right, so that's really what's at the heart of all of it.
And it doesn't hurt that you started with James Randi either. I mean, that's a hell of a resume booster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great because he came to my college to I was studying art. Like, I have a degree in painting. Like, that's my educational background. I knew when I was a kid I wanted to go to. Yeah, fine art, man, fine art degrees. Like, that's one of the reasons college was invented.
That's awesome.
They'll just give degrees to anybody.
Because painting is one of those things, like, you, no matter what, you can't mess it up. Like, you cannot have wrong.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
The more wrong it is, the more right it is. Like, the more it looks
That's That's some postmodern nothing means anything bullshit. Like, listen, if you're an artist, you better have something to say. And if you can't communicate that message through your work, you've failed. So that's why any artist who's like, it's up to interpretation. It's up whatever the viewer takes away from it. Like, fuck you. You're abdicating your responsibility as an artist to create something that says anything. It's like, I won't abide by that.
I think you're being short-sighted here, because what better way for a person who has nothing to say than to say it with splashy lines and eroded colors? I mean, that is saying something. So really, when he says, I have nothing to say, he speaks volumes. I'm just saying.
Right. It's kind of like that idea that there are no values, there's no morality, there's no empirical way to evaluate or judge anything, so nothing means anything, and that's the best way to view reality. Like, fuck you. You just said that that's the best analysis for reality. Your argument fails on its first premise.
It's a good thing Steve's not here.
I was getting ready to say the exact same thing. I was getting ready to say.
I saw Steve you was probably something. Was like, oh, let's bring in the GIMP. Let's.
Steve, please send me a P versus Q minus X right now. Let me know that you're alive and watching. Steve, just to let you know, Steve has very strict definitions on what he's a philosophy guy, so he has very strict definitions on what atheists are and agnostics, and anytime somebody says the word like nihilist or colloquial three times, he appears like Beetlejuice. So we've said him once.
My favorite thing. Well, words are great. Words are great, and they have definitions. So words are symbols for reality. And we go, okay, that it stands in for this. So that's why we got to have really precise definitions. And really observe them, because words have meanings. I'm like, fuck yeah, okay, awesome. There's a second way to use words, which is as a category, as a box to throw things that have similarities together, right? Just like cat. You just throw cats in there. You're like, is tiger cat? And you're like, yeah, sure, fuck it, whatever. Throw it in there. What about
a dangerous
serval?
Box, Jonathan.
I don't know. It's a fucking weird-ass cat thing? Okay, throw it in there. So you can use them as kind of loose category holders. And the third way is as a tool, and using words as tools to shape a malleable reality is a super cool way to use them. But that's diametrically opposed from words have definitions, instead of using words as tools to cause change in somebody's mind or reality.
See, I just stop at words. Words describe meaning. Like, after that, to me, it's just too much work. You know what I mean? Like, if the rest of it's just way too much. Like, just tell me
exactly
what a word
it's,
means.
It's I'm okay. Arguing with it. How many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It's like, okay, sure, you know the definition, but I can still punch you in the face. Fuck it.
Seven,
right? It's like,
seven, obviously. Okay, so do you talk about, when you're talking to someone, like let's say Casey goes to one of your shows and you, number one, how do you pick someone that you're going to talk to, and what direction do you go in? Like, are you ever worried that you might bring up something that's either like too traumatic or too emotional to that person? Like, where do you walk that line on what to talk with them about?
Actually, yeah, I'll take the second one first and then go back to the first one.
Christopher Hitchens.
That's the main reason why I went the comedy route, was this stuff can get really heavy. And people, if you advertise it as a mind reading mentalist spooky experience, people will show up asking you, would you please get in touch with the spirit of my dead mom? I know that she's here, but I can't hear what she's saying. And clearly you're the person that can do this, right? It's like, Jesus, what? That is some tough shit to deal with.
Right.
And to look somebody in the eye and go, nope, I can't do that. No, I just saw you on stage. That was a theatrical performance. Those were magic tricks. And if they weren't good, you wouldn't believe it. So they're really good magic tricks, but they're just magic tricks. Now, I know you have to say that to everybody else, but I'm one of the believe. I know you're real. and you can't talk him out of it. So I went the opposite route. I went to the silly comedy, let's all have fun. We're just going to think of the name of your first pet, right? The name of your first crush. I don't deal with anything of death or spirits or anything like that. Aside from the special seance show that I do in Halloween time. And even then, it's a skeptic's take on this thing that used to happen. Right. So then I talk about the spirit of my dead grandma and then do it in a way that really makes people uncomfortable. Right. Her dying breath was make money off my memory. Right. That kind of thing. And everybody's like, Jesus. Yeah, you're right. You would be doing that. Okay. So just kind of pointing to the fact that these mediums are perverting the memory of these people that their audience love. And that's how they make their living, which to me, it makes my skin crawl. I'm not going to do it. So that's why I went the comedy route instead of the talking about spirits.
Right. Let me ask you this real quick. Yeah. So when you do the seance things, you're not going into it like actively trying or attempting to contact a spirit. Like this is a pre-scripted, like theatrical event, or how does that work?
It's a pre-scripted event that's interactive with people. The physical process, right? The physical thing that happens exactly the same way as it did in the late 1800s. Like there's no electronics, there's no nothing going on different than what actually happened back then. But instead of telling people that it's their dead grandma doing it, I'm telling them that I'm helping make this happen. And it's the spirit of my dead grandma who loves this going on. And then the payoff is so clearly, obviously contrived that it won't make anybody a believer. That kind of thing.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Mm-mm. No, you're dead. You're worm food. Good luck.
Casey, do you believe in ghosts?
No.
Yeah.
Cool. Why? But, do you believe in ghosts, Kyle?
Of course. I have one that lives under my bed. He will not go away. I keep trying to pay him, get him to pay rent, but he just won't. No, I don't believe in ghosts either. However, I will say this. I am a bandwagon ghost believer, right? So if I used to work at haunted houses in high school. I would, after school, I would go and we would build. It's a huge haunted house in my town. And I would go there and I got my own room and each year and I would make a room. And, you know, there would be several of us doing it and we would all piece together this haunted house. But at nighttime, leading up to the actual nights that we were open, it was an old house. It was like an old farmhouse. It was built in the 1800s. And like at night when the wind blew, the floors like creaked. And I swear, ghosts live there. Now, when I'm not there, I can tell you that I don't believe in ghosts. But in that situation, absolutely 100% real. Without question.
Yeah, your limbic system, your lizard brain is like, fuck this, I'm out. There's some predator here. There are patterns of sounds and noises that match evolutionary predator sounds that have been ingrained in millions of years of evolution. This situation makes me uncomfortable. The only way I can explain it is ghosts. So it's ghosts. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Kids are the worst.
I do love
freaky kids are the worst.
I hate.
No,
I,
you, not, you just no, end I, it there. I, kids I, are the worst. Like children are awful.
So I was just going to say I hate kids. Nork. That's not what I meant. What I meant was they're scary and creepy, and I like mine, but I don't like anyone else's. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I was meaning more like children with corn, y'all. Y'all just totally went anti-child on me. I was talking about like the white-haired, white-eyed, freaky kids that hide out in cornfields.
No, they don't have to be freaky kids. So like my friend Jackie has two little kids, and her youngest, she had a video monitor. Wow. You know what I'm talking about? The monitor with the screen. And so she can see. Well, so the youngest one in the middle of the night would like stand up on the side of his crib and look out into the room and talk like somebody was there and wave and shit.
I can just got cold chills right now. No.
So it doesn't even have to be. It doesn't even have to be a creepy kid. Like that shit is fucked up. And so like I'm not in. That's messed up. That would scare the shit out of me.
Here's a piece of advice. Do not get cams like that you put out either in your house or in the woods. I had a really good friend of mine. This is a true story. She was hearing this stuff at nighttime. Like she said, it sounded like people walking around. She lived out in the woods. Okay. And, you know, everybody was just kind of like, it's animals. It's, you know, it could be a number of things. Well, her husband hunts. So they have several of those deer cams that are, you know, spread out around the house. Well, they were going through and looking at these cams one night, and there was a guy, right, in all white. He had on a white shirt and all white pants in frame, just staring right at the camera. And it was the timestamp for it was 3:30 in the morning. Now, who's walking out in the middle of the woods like that at nighttime? I mean, that's just freaky as hell. If it happens, that's fine. But if I know about it, that's when I freak out. Like, if I don't know about it, we're good.
You're like, as long as I don't know, it's cool.
Yeah. I don't want to. Yeah, no.
No, so, thank you.
Going back to the people who do kind of buy into this, right? I'm sure in your field, you come across a lot of guys like John Edwards and those that actively, you know, they confess to being able to connect with people on the other side. Mm-hmm. What are they using, or what kind of tricks are they doing when people are so convinced that they're talking about their relative? You know what I mean? Like when somebody goes to one of those events and you have somebody like John Edwards saying, I'm getting this, I'm getting that. And you have somebody that it eventually zeroes in on where they're like, oh, that's my relative. What are they doing to kind of get to that point?
There, lots of things. And that's kind of the problem. To answer this question, I promise you I'll come back to it. I'm going to answer the question of how you pick people from the audience, and then that'll show you kind of how it plays out for television audiences.
I'm glad you're keeping up with my questions.
Right. Got them mapped out. So the thing is, my show has essentially stayed the same for years. I've done it's got a good structure and it's got a good pace, and I know where all the hits are, where the lows are, the comedy. Like it's a thing of beauty. I love it. It's magnificent. Now, I've done that show 1,000 times, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, right? Now, I've been there for every single one of them, right? So I've been in this show, this particular context, 1,000 hours more than the person who's watching it for the first time. So the audience changes, but my show stays the same. So the volunteer is the only variable in this experiment known as my show. Right. So if you change a routine out and put a new one in, that's a lot of variables to wonder whether it's working or not working. And it's difficult to isolate what you have to change to make it work. Right. So I've gone through that process. So now my opening segment of my show, whether I'm doing a 20-minute segment in somebody else's performance, like their show, or I'm doing my full 70-minute theater show, whatever it is, I do exactly the same opening 3 minutes, no matter what, because that opening 3 minutes is my litmus test, because I know how the basic personality types respond to this opening 3 minutes. So from the instant I'm walking out down to I wait 2 seconds to walk out after they announce my name, like it's that detailed. Because they now, please welcome to the stage, mind reader Johnny Zavant. Like, that's my mind reading character. And then I don't do anything. I stay out of field of view for a good 2 seconds so that people don't have time consciously, but their non-conscious mind is going, where is he? Where's he going to be? Where is it? Right? So if you come out immediately, you go, please welcome to the stage, mind reader Jonathan Pritchard, and you're immediately out, there's no opportunity for you to generate interest in the minds of your audience. But by not showing up exactly when they expect you to, you make them wait. They're now already being conditioned to wait for your pattern, right? So then, please welcome to stage, mind reader Jonathan Pritchard. Then I walk out and they go, oh, there he is. And they didn't even know they were asking a question. It's
when we come on.
Intentional, it's great. Unintentional, not so good. So so I come out and do that thing. So I'm doing the jokes and everything, and I'm watching people's reactions. That guy's laughing too much. Oh, he volunteered way too fast. So he views himself as a trickster joke guy. And he wants to test his mettle against a professional entertainer because he thinks because he can make people laugh at the water cooler that he would be a great entertainer. But an entertainer's obligation is to manage the experience for a room full of people, not make one person think that he's funny. Right?
That happens with stand-up
a lot. I'm sure
when I used to do stand-up in college, you would have – every single weekend you would have the worst were when people would come in with bachelor parties or bachelorette parties, because there's always one person in those that think that they're funnier than you and they're going to show everyone at the table. And
exactly.
I always had
and all
always
they're a stock good
line that I used where I would go, they would get to talking and I would say, you know what? If your dick was as big as your mouth was, you wouldn't be wasting your time here at a comedy club with me. You'd be at home fucking her. And that would shut them up very quickly. But
I love that.
Every damn, single Kyle. Time that.
That's
actually not mine. But I did use it because it was too good.
Yeah.
It was way too good.
Yeah. It's like I've structured the show so that I don't get hecklers anymore by making everybody else the star of the show. I make them make everything happen, right? They don't know how it happened. They know I made it happen, but they're getting the credit for it. So, okay, I'm going to go along with it anyway. So in that case, if in the way off chance, like once every 3 years I get a heckler, I can shut him down and be like, look, I'm not going to let you heckle my good friend up here who's doing a brave thing, coming on stage in front of all you people and working with somebody they've never met before. They're working hard to make sure that you're having fun. And you know what? I will not allow you to make fun of them. So you either shut up or you're going to get out. It's your choice.
Make him
What's
disappear.
It going
to
be?
Throw a blanket right. over
make
him.
Make him disappear.
Make security take him out.
No, no. You can't. You absolutely cannot meet that with any kind of joke, because that will be taken as an invitation to, oh, this is the time where I get to show off to the performer guy. This is my time to be funny, right? So you've got to completely get rid of that conceit and just go, look, I'm talking to you as a real person, and what your behavior is unacceptable because it's impacting my friend here that I just met, and it's my job to make sure everybody in this room has a good time, and you are actively making that not happen. So if you're willing to sit down and participate along with everybody else in a collaborative way, I want you here. But if not, you have to leave right now. Well, I was just, I don't
penis.
Want excuses. I don't need to hear any explanations. You either agree or don't. And if you don't, leave.
And what
okay,
happens?
Good.
Do they agree or do they stick around or do they have to go?
And then they're just like, I'm sorry. I'm like, okay, here we go. And then they always come up to me afterwards and like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, it's cool. You just needed to know where the boundaries were. You found them. But
you know what I feel it would work
I'm sure everybody,
in this environment, if you looked at them and just went, I'm not even mad at you. I just want to tell you that I'm really disappointed in your behavior. And I can't even look at you.
That
right
was
now.
My dad. That was
no,
my dad.
That hurts worse than anything.
Right, but that's the weird thing about it. Anything that's not the performance will not work. Because it will be taken as continuing the dynamic that encouraged their heckling in the first place.
So we have to make it believable. So you can go like in a soap opera. I am so disappointed in you.
Well, no, you just can't not tell them why their behavior is inappropriate. You can't try to shame them. You can't, in the context of this mind reading collaborative improv dynamic, it cannot happen if one person thinks that I'm going to let that bullshit continue, right? Because if it were just me on stage doing my juggling or whatever, whether there was an audience or not, I could still do it. Then fuck it. I don't care if there's a heckler, because then I'll shut him down. Sure. Because my success and getting paid isn't predicated on getting people from the audience up on stage and being able to do it in a way that everybody enjoys, but especially my client who's got thousands of dollars of my money in her pocket.
Hmm.
Now, how am I going to resolve this so that my client is still happy and looks like $1 million to her boss?
Start getting it up front.
So, yeah, I have a question. That'd be great. So, a question. What is like people's favorite bit that you do? Like people's generally the favorite trick that you do?
That's really weird because there isn't one. I'm always surprised because I ask people. It's called question and answer act. And it goes back to the oracles of Delphi when people would ask questions to the oracle. The oracle would go commune with the god, babble insanely, and then the priest would interpret the message and then give the message to the person. It's why people go to palm readers. It's why people go to tarot card readers. They want to know about themselves. So I just tell people about themselves. And we all find out interesting things about each other together. And to me, it's fascinating because it's different every single time. And it's focused on them. And it's amazing. It's funny. It's got all the texture. It's got fun moments. So yeah, that's my favorite thing because it's the most direct connection with the audience. So there's that one. We're halfway through the audience choosing thing. So I've got my litmus test to know that I'm not going to invite the guy who volunteered too quickly, because I've been in the situation where I go, you know what? Come on down. And then it's a fucking train wreck. And my whole show is destroyed because this one just asshole thought, you know what? This is how I derive pleasure from destroying others. And I invited that on stage. So that's negative reinforcement. So let's not do that again. So you find the boundaries of the right personalities and you see it right away, how people respond to that exact same opening from 10 years I've been doing that. Right. So then I now know, okay, that's the guy I'm going to bring up for this routine. That's the person I'm going to bring up for this routine. Those are the three people that I'm going to bring up for the other thing. So I'm already mapping out who is going to help out with the show. And I just straight up tell people, I go, look, I understand it can be uncomfortable being in the room with a mind reader. Everybody, you got your secrets, you got things you don't want shared. And I give you my word as a person, not a performer, that I will never reveal anything embarrassing about you. I mean, unless it's hilarious and then all bets are off. But really, you guys make my show. I'm a mind reader. I could tell you what I'm thinking, but that's not impressive. The only way that we're going to be amazed tonight is if I could tell you what you're thinking. And since you make up the show, I want to treat you with love and respect so that you've got the best chance of having the best time of your life. You're going to have experiences you've never had ever before. And I do not want to take that from you. So I want to show all of you the respect that you're due. And as an audience, you're going to show exactly the same level of love and respect for anybody who's brave enough to help out with the show so that you've got something fun to watch and tell your friends about later. Now, with that agreement, we can move forward, right? And everybody's like, fuck yeah, okay, yeah. They all clap because, boy, this guy seems like he's all right. And that's right at the beginning of the show. So now, who's gonna heckle that, right? Who's going to go, nope, I want to be an asshole that violates the contract that we all just agreed together to uphold?
Yeah, lots of people.
And they don't come to my show.
Not Twitter.
That's good though. I mean, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Right. So all my advertise, and I don't even do many public shows. I don't let those people into my experiences.
That's good.
They're just not invited, because for the most part, I'm invited by the college student activities board to come in and entertain college kids who have self-selected to show up and spend their time at my show. They're not forced to. In the corporate world, sometimes, you know what, I do a lot of holiday shows, a lot of Christmas time shows. So they go, you know what, we've been saving up all year to have a great party for everybody, and we're going to be doing awards and giving away the 35-year award to Carl. He's been with us for 35 years now, so we're just going to really have a good time, and we want you to be the entertainment for that. Right. So when I show up,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, when I show up, I go, you know what? Your CEO asked me to, your CEO flew me in from Chicago. That's where I'm based. He and I, we go way back, and he flew me in from Chicago because he wanted to show you guys a great time. So let's have fun. Now, what employee is going to mouth off to the CEO's friend,
a former
one, person that's getting fired tomorrow? Yeah, exactly. So there are ways to leverage the interpersonal psychology of the particular dynamic to make sure that people behave in alignment with what is appropriate for the experience you're trying to create for them.
Sure. And because I think we will share similar situations with this, because in college I used to I did a stand-up, and I myself would get booked for holiday gigs, especially a lot of corporate outings. There was a huge golf complex near where we were, and it was like they were booking comedians left and right all the time, every weekend almost, to come in there and do parties. Now, there are three different types of parties that you can do, I think. This is my experience. There are sober, family wholesome
parties. Yep.
There are weekend raging alcoholic, I mean, just balls to the wall. And then there are what I call the in-betweens. These are the people that they have that token program almost, where they get a certain amount of vouchers for drinks. Everything's regulated. Mm-hmm. So they can only have like three drinks per their party. Those are the worst. That's like purgatory. Nobody wants to be
mandatory
there.
Fun.
Right, exactly.
So get three laugh units. Spend them wisely.
What's the weirdest, or the, do you have a story that sticks out with you in these corporate events? Because I have a really I have a story that will never, ever, ever leave me. And I feel like people who are in that situation that, you know, deal with those kind of circumstances, there's always one that sticks out as like memorable for not the right reasons.
Right. So far, I've been fortunate enough to have taken enough precautions that I haven't had one of those yet, but I just know that it's kind of like potential energy. The higher up you get, the more kinetic energy could be released. So I know my potential awful experience just keeps increasing more and more for every time I go and don't have a horrible experience, until like I'm going to die on stage or something. Well, but yeah, like, I've had horrible experiences on stage, but like in the corporate world so far, I'm doing pretty good. Cause you know, a lot of the coke money, right? The cocaine 80s and the dot-com 90s crazy parties where it's just like, fuck, we'll have a mind reader and 8 strippers. Yeah. Like that was kind of before my time. And then 2008 hit, and then the recession. So a lot of the expendable dollars just evaporated. So many companies don't have that kind of ridiculous money to spend on a nightmare scenario for their entertainer. If they're going to bring in an entertainer, this is, you know what? We're not going to have the chocolate cake, so we can afford to have this guy in. And they're not going to fuck it up. They're just like, oh, okay, let's be careful here, guys. Yeah.
Usually, from what I've seen, it's unforeseeable circumstances. Like for me, the day that I still to this day, it gives me cold chills to think about. But I was approached after a show on a Friday by two gentlemen. They owned a – it was some type of insurance business. But they said they were having some comedians come in to do a couple, like, 5 minutes in front of them and their other partner, and then they were going to decide who they wanted to bring to their holiday party. And, you know, it would be that. It was a great paying gig. Everything was fantastic. So I went on a Thursday. I did probably 4 minutes and didn't get any reaction then. They said, okay, we'll let you know if we decide anything. So the next day I get a call and they said, oh, we'd like you to be the guy. So I said, okay, cool. So I show up at this place on Saturday night, and where it's at is it used to be a travel agency that went under in like 1970. It was in one of those like shopping malls, but old shopping malls, like, you know, with the angled buildings and brick. And it was very ominous. I should have gotten out of there then, but I was too greedy. I wanted like, the money.
Well, I need to check. Yeah.
So I go in, and everybody's nice and wonderful. It's a good time, and they're eating, and then the entertainment portion comes. And right before I'm getting ready to go on stage, the event organizer comes into the back and says, okay, well, we had a little bit of a mess up last night, and there was some bickering going on, and we had two things planned. We were going to have our spoken word poetry night last night and then the comedy tonight, but it got rained out, so we're just smashing the two together, and we're just going to let a couple poets go up and do their poetry, and then you can go up and do your comedy thing. And so that's a nightmare, like, alone, because they're two completely separate tones. Like, you have the slam poetry, which is very intense and very, you know, serious, and then comedy's not. So I'm going after the poets. I have no idea how they're going to whip up the crowd and what emotions, happy, sad, whatever. First one goes up. It's, you know, it's very neutral. It's just a generic poem. The next one's kind of sad. Now the last person goes up there, and African-American lady, that's important to the story. And she says this, and I'm standing next to the stage, and like my knees buckle. She goes, okay, my poem is entitled Being Released from the Hands of the White Man. And it is a 10-minute intense freeing from slavery epilogue. Like, I was almost moved to tears on this side, and I'm supposed to go up and make dick jokes after this. And I bombed. I didn't make one person in that entire room laugh. It was 20 minutes of just saying words and no reactions. So that was the last corporate gig I ever did.
That's intense.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah, that's lucky. Awful. Yeah, well, I'm not saying I've never had awful stories. Like, I've had a person right before going on go, oh, hey, just so you know, this is kind of a rough crowd. It was a commuter school. It was a community college. So most of the kids would drive there, do the class thing, and then get in their cars and drive home at the end of the day. So it's not like college. It's commuter school. So it's the middle of nowhere. And this woman right before I go on goes, hey, just so you know, last week, the comedian got booed off stage. Don't worry. If that happens to you, you'll still get paid. We know they're tough. We're just trying a new program, seeing how it goes. So, okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Please welcome the mind reader. Okay, here we go. And I did my job and made people laugh, and they clapped, and it was great. And then she goes, holy crap, I've never seen anybody pull it out like that. That's amazing. So that was fun. I mean, I've bombed in front of 2,000 people.
Knowing, though, in advance that people are going to laugh.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I did bomb in front of 2,000 people. That's a whole 45-minute story of context surrounding this 15-minute block of time that did the whole time dilation horror film. It's like it's just moving in slow motion and everything's crashing. Yeah, it was a 15-minute car crash that lasted for hours in my experience and takes like an hour to tell right. It was like horrible.
It's like you saw that coming.
Yeah, I wish, but time doesn't have a mind to read.
Oh,
that's why I don't. That's why I don't claim to be a psychic or be able to predict the future. So that goes back to the idea of. So see, I still remember. How many tricks are there? Are the tricks already done and they're just getting rehashed, or how is it to think of new ones? Well, really, there's mind-to-mind communication. There's predicting the future. There's influencing somebody's choice. There's moving something with your mind. There aren't that many different skills to demonstrate. So there aren't really that many tricks to do, if that makes sense, right? There aren't that many different narratives to employ for a routine. So I've pared it all the way down. I just claim to be a mind reader. Just go, look, I'm going to read your mind. There you go. So, and weird mental coincidences happen, right? Kind of serendipity thing. But really I'm a mind reader. So I use my five senses to make it. Huh?
Do you go looking for a new, it seems to me that there's always that for people who want to be like magicians or whatever, there's that kind of drive, even if they may not, you know, entertain it all that often, but to be the one that comes up with something that's like new and innovative. Like, how do you keep from becoming just stale and burn out with, you know, routines?
Yeah. I've made peace with the fact that I'm not creative in that dimension. Right. So think of it like this. Chris Angel worked for years and years and years doing this really different, innovative illusion show. And Chris Angel was the character, right? That was the Chris Angel character. Yeah.
So hot.
And he spent his life cultivating this thing and getting a following. And then some producers just like, your look is amazing. We could make this work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get booked to do a special, a TV special. So you go, all right, fuck it. I've been doing this trick and we can make it do this. All right. Yeah. Let's do that. Now you just filmed your life's work. And then the executives go, okay, what do you got for us next year? So how do you cram 30 years worth of practice into 6 months so that you can film it and then shoot it for next year's release?
With Ryan Seacrest, he can drag out anything. Have you seen how he did those breaks on American Idol?
That's exactly it. You involve celebrities to improve your cachet, but you also hire creative consultants. You hire people who are really good at coming up with interesting premise for different tricks. All right, so you can read minds, but you know what would be really neat is if you could read somebody's mind while they had aluminum foil over their head or whatever the idea is.
Laying on a bed of nails while someone walked on top of you, balancing an elephant. I could do that
exactly.
Job.
Exactly.
How do I sign up?
You get to be my buddy, Brent, who that is literally his job. He's a
Brent,
magic consultant. Magicians hire him because he's got great ideas. Now, he can devastate your brain. He's phenomenally skillful, but he has absolutely no drive to be a world famous magician. Right? He doesn't want to be known as a performer. His interest is in dreaming up new things. So then he dreams up new things and goes, hey, Jonathan, plus we've known each other for something like 15 years now. So he's one of the few people who really understands my character, what I'm trying to do, the environments where I do it, the type of opportunities that are available to pull it off. So he really understands me and what I'm all about. So then he can go, hey, I got this idea for a thing and I think it'd be perfect for you. Here's what I'm thinking. And then I go, holy shit, that would be amazing. Here's a ton of money because that's going in my next show. And then I take out one piece from the show that's not as good as that new thing that he just told me. And I go, all right, so this is a lot of volunteers' body language reading routine. So I'm going to take that one out and put this one in because it is better fit for that part of the show. It's a better piece to convey my character. It's a better piece to connect with the audience more effectively. So there's so much more to the question of, well, what am I going to do today than just what trick I think is neat? Because there are tricks I think that are neat that I just can't perform well. For whatever reason, I couldn't make it work with an audience after 10 times of trying. I go, all right, maybe I just don't have the skills for it yet as far as presentation skills or whatever. So I got to take it out and put that dumb thing that I don't understand why I have it in my show, aside from the fact that lots of people go, boy, that was my favorite thing. Because during the autograph line, I ask people, so what was your favorite thing in the show? So I know to keep it in. And that's just, if I don't hear something, then I know that I need to replace it with something else. But I get a really good distribution of, I liked that thing you did with the memory thing. Oh, I liked the thing you did with the book. Oh, I liked when you talked to everybody in the audience. That was neat. So just everybody has their own favorite thing. And I go, all right, then I guess the show's working pretty well.
We are so much alike. And we're hitting on the 90-minute mark. It flies so much faster when we have a show in here that is a lot of fun. But you just said something that it resonates with us, because there are many times where I go, I don't know why we're having another one of these, but these are the ones that people watch. It's the most interesting thing. We will have a show that I think is fascinating. Like when we have some of the PhDs come on and talk about like either space or, you know, the artificial intelligence thing, I think those are fascinating. And they do good, but they don't, they hail in comparison to someone who doesn't believe that viruses exist, or a guy that thinks that we are the center of the earth, or that pisses on himself for therapy.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're just like, well, okay, this guy's saying it's not going to titillate me, but look at this dumb motherfucker. Look, what kind of crazy shit are they going to talk about? Yeah, it's so weird what happens and what clicks and what doesn't. Yeah,
it is. Neat. People love it's funny because we get so many people saying, stop doing these. Stop. Don't have another one of these yet. Mm-hmm. It's triple the views of, you know, everything else. I don't understand it. And sometimes I feel like we're helping with the problem, but it's too dumb.
You know, if you stopped clicking on it, we'd stop doing it.
But don't stop clicking, guys. Don't stop clicking.
Yeah, right. Don't stop
clicking. We need a parody of that, like Journey. Don't stop clicking.
Don't stop clicking.
This is good.
Yeah. There you go. There's a reason why I'm not a singer.
Listen, somebody asked me. Go ahead.
We might get to hear good singing at the end.
Is he here?
If you want a song. I think he just got back. Hey, John.
We'll do super chats real quick. Dave, I can pull him up.
No, I got him up, Kyle. I got him up.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yep. So we got a Sandring Person for $20. This show just keeps getting better. Thank you for all the content. You're welcome.
We love you.
Esselikan.
Next.
$2. I think Kyle must be simple. Date, bedroom, magic.
Fuck you, Lisa.
I mean, I could show you a good time. It's those skills do translate across domain. I'm just saying it's the different skills than the trick than what you're going to appreciate. Show away,
sure. Yeah, show away. A Sandring Person for another $20. I volunteered to get mentalized. Sounds like a good time.
Thank you.
Deal.
Trevor Hudson for $2. Steve McRae. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Oh, God.
Heard.
And Wellington Smith. I think that's when we were
talking about the PQ thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah.
And Wellington Smith for $5. Kyle, does your guest have a resource for starting doing mentalism just for fun, impressing your friends and family.
There you go.
Oh, there's a book. Ah. Think like a mind reader.
Yeah, how about that, ladies and gentlemen?
And you can use the book as a prop to read your friends' minds. So there's a mind reading trick built into the physical pages. So the process of learning how to use the book to make it look like you can read your friends' minds is the process of becoming a better communicator, which will help you at business, in your relationships, all that kind of fun stuff. So that's not just a cheap sales pitch, even though it
is. Get that book back up here. Make it a sales pitch. Yeah. Let's hear about the book.
There you go. So there's no ebook version of this. So there's no Kindle version of Think Like a Mind Reader, because being able to use it to do the trick is such a big part of the message of how to think in terms of how other people perceive you and how to change your communication to be more effective, right? So you can't do the trick with the book if you don't have the actual physical pages to work with, if that makes sense.
Cool. Yes.
Right, so, awesome. So I have a question.
Let me just say, I'll get the link to that. If you'll email it to me, I'll put it in the description as well, so people can
think like a mindreader.com. Boom. Easy.
Yeah. Also, it's on Amazon.
It is 4.9 stars.
Yeah. But I have a question. Is there a way to get a signed copy of this book? Because I sort of collect those.
Ooh. I think there is. Let me see. Nobody has honored me with that question in a very long time. Yes. But yeah,
Did you read
buy their book.
Yeah. Did you read the second book of the guy that came on and sent you the Mind Virus one?
So I haven't read it yet, but I have it. I bought it. Oh, okay. I haven't read it yet. And he should be back in the States. If he's not already, he should be soon. And I'm gonna ship him the books I bought so that he can sign them and then send them back.
Read it. It's really good.
Cool. Yeah, I just haven't had time because with getting my master's, I have way too much reading with homework and shit to do.
Yeah, definitely the master's not in magic.
The link is ugly, but I used Gumroad for it. It's like gum.co/thinklikeamindreader, and that's the link I use.
Side chat?
Yeah,
in our video,
next little side chat. Here and there. Boop. Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you.
So I used that because I keep like 20 of them in my place. So that way if I ever get an order and I get home from being on the road, I'm like, oh, here you go. And send it out. Yeah. But for most people, just keep
in conversation with people, like
every opportunity, like it just, it's in my bag all the time. And I wrote it not to sell it and be a New York Times bestseller, and I didn't even write it to be an author. I wrote it because I had to, right? It's like I had to get these thoughts out of my head into a book so that I could have new conversations with people. So now most of the time when they go, well, what about this? And I'm like, you know what? You should just read my book there. Right, because I talk genius. About that at length in my book. So yeah, mm-hmm.
Good deal, man. That's what's up. I've always wanted to write a book, but it'd just be a coloring book. That's the only kind of book that I could ever do. Yeah. Go ahead, David.
You just start, and then you do it.
Yeah,
there's a couple more. Ghostly Enigma for $2. I like watching Stupid as it makes me laugh. Not sure why.
Hope you've been having fun.
Hope you've been having fun. A Sandring Person, again, for $20 more. I just wanted to be mentioned 3 times, too.
Okay. Oh, like Steve McRae.
All right. Yeah they're going to show up in the mirror, right?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Beetlejuice. There you go.
Thank you, guys. We're going to have you back on soon because I literally
I'm for it.
Let me show you. I literally had 20 questions that I got to three on. So it looks like we're gonna have we're gonna have seven more episodes. So get ready.
I'm for it. And we didn't even get into the kung fu. Oh, geez, I could talk about that all day too.
Say that again.
We didn't even get into the kung fu. Yeah, it's like I've done the math. Right, this is something I talk about. Is my first paid gig for Magic was when I was 13 years old, and I've had a normal job for 9 months since then, and I'm 35 years old now. So if you do the math, 40 hours a week, 50 weeks out of the year, for 22 years, that's more than 45,000 hours that I've had to do with whatever the fuck I wanted with my life. So I've had time to practice and get good at a lot of things that most people don't even have time to get good at one thing. So I got a lot of irons and a lot of fires and just try to share the wealth with the world.
We're not bringing you back on. It'll just piss me off.
All right, that's it. All right, see you later. I'm just going to grab this banjo.
I tell you what.
See, John has
poorly. That's my newest one. That's my newest.
Where is John?
Hobby. Like, I picked it up a couple.
He's right here. Yeah. He was just waiting for when we're
okay.
Ready.
So let's do this. We have a tradition. Godless Engineer is getting ready to come on. This will be his 76th appearance on the show. But he always sings us out. So the two of you together doing a collaboration would be, it's just impromptu. But it would be epic. But before we do that, can you give us what is your favorite quote and any kind of parting words that you have as we leave here tonight? And then we will break out in song as we always do.
Okay. First one is change your mind, change your life. Because if you change how you think about your resources, your relationships, yourself, your problems, everything, you could change everything just simply by changing how you think about it. The other one, illegitimus non carborundum. Do not be ground down nor worn away by those of illegitimate birth. Don't let the bastards get you down.
Did you just have a stroke there before you said that? What happened?
I don't know. Was that glitch out or something?
No, what was that? What was that first phrase that you said? Was that English?
Oh, no, it's Latin. Illegitimus non carborundum. Carborundum.
I thought you were having a stroke. Okay. I just wanted to make sure you're right.
No, that's my good. Latin motto. Mm-hmm. That's my family's crest, family of one.
I like it. Okay. Were you going to join him, Jonathan? You don't have to. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I don't. What singing do you do?
Oh, he makes
strum an instrument. I bang my desk. That's my contribution.
I can.
It's called winging it.
Oh yes, a banjo. This is fantastic.
He's got a banjo.
All right.
Oh, sorry. I'll
stay over here. I don't know chords or anything, so it will make noise.
You're good.
All right. Deal.
All right. Let's do it. Go ahead.
Mentalist, I like that show. I can read your mind and do other shit. And there's some other things that Darren Brown does. He can train banjo. You to be a preacher that heals you.
Banjo and the ukulele are destined to be together.
Yeah. That's all I got. I don't really have much prepared for a mentalist. I find mentalism to be pretty cool in general. Like, I don't know.
You should get a banjo because we live in Alabama.
Yeah, and then I should only learn to play the Deliverance song.
Yes, agree.
Well, congratulations on your 75th appearance, Godless Engineer.
Yay.
Casey, as always, Dave, I'm Kyle. That was Jonathan Pritchard, the mentalist, and he will be back for another round of mentalism. Is that a word?
I'm for it. Yeah, mentalizing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. And we'll see you guys back here tomorrow, where we will be talking to Jordan Culliver, who is has a lot of cartoons that kind of depict evolution in a really interesting way. So we're going to talk about what all went into that. He was actually on Shannon's show recently, and I thought he was fascinating. So we'll be talking with him tomorrow, and then on Friday, climate change. So nothing controversial there. I'm sure we'll all leave in agreement and just have a good old grand time.
Yeah.
Good night. Thanks for having me, guys. So much fun.
No, thanks thank
for
you.
Coming on. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Bye, y'all.
It's good.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.